Blog Talk Radio. Welcome to the Middle Ground on the Coffee Party USA Internet Radio Network, hosted by Blog Talk Radio. The Middle Ground looks at today's political issues from left, right, and center. We're always civil and always looking for that middle ground where real conversation begins. You're here tonight with hosts Eric Beiler and Michael Charney. We thank you for joining us and hope you enjoy the next hour of The Middle Ground.
Everybody, those of you that have hung on, this is Janine Loudon, and I am holding the airspace for Eric Beiler to call in. I want to thank all the people in chat who have been carrying on the conversation, waiting for our Blog Talk Radio technology problems to be dealt with by the Blog Talk engineers. So I don't pretend to be prepared to lead this conversation, except that I find it to be compelling, the whole notion that, we've taken, for some people, it looks like we have taken a 50-year step backwards in terms of voter rights and voter suppression. Other people have a lot of faith in the Congress and believe that if we take this issue back to Congress, they'll give us the solution that we need. I'll tell you, though, I just heard the other day that the only thing in the United States that has a public opinion rating lower than Congress right now is your cell phone provider and your cable company. So I see that we have a hand up. I'm going to open a mic on area code 323. Welcome to the Middle Ground.
Janine, you are so persistent.
Well, here's your show, Eric, and I'm just here to support you.
Well, gosh, I gave up after 55 busy signals.
I know. It was really frustrating. For those of you that don't know, what we would get is we would call in and we'd get a busy signal and then get hung up on in the host line, then a busy signal get hung up on in the guest line. And then when I saw a guest number appear on the board, I went, oh, my gosh, and I tried at that moment, and certainly we got in. So I know people have been hanging on, Eric, because I know they're interested in your particular take on the Supreme Court decision today, especially in light of the experience that you and Annabelle Park are having in your filming down in North Carolina. So maybe that's a good place to start.
Okay, well, I'm emailing Professor Joyner to see if he will 646-929-2495. See if he'll call in after all this time. I was all ready to go. I don't know if I've ever prepared more for one of these shows.
You have an hour.
Yeah, what do I do? Okay. Well, first of all, I want people listening to kind of understand some of the basics. The Voting Rights Act was not struck down in entirety at all. What Justice Roberts has done, what he looked like he wanted to do all along, is he said that the criteria for choosing which states and jurisdictions have to be granted clearance to change voting laws by the Justice Department, that criteria is unfair because it does not reflect the current day. According to his argument, this isn't exactly true, but according to his argument, when the Voting Rights Act was written in 1965, it was certainly true that all of the Confederate states and some other jurisdictions and some other states were using voter suppression tactics to prevent African Americans from participating in our democracy. And he says, well, since then, I guess we can take as a badge of honor that there are several states outside of the South, pretty much all of the swing states, where lawmakers are trying to prevent African Americans from voting. So therefore, we can, I guess, say that the Section 4, which helps to identify, well, it stipulates how to identify those states that need preclearance, is unfair. Because after all, Ohio and Pennsylvania and Florida, Arizona was already in there, but a number of states that were not already covered under Section 5 of the Voting Rights Act via Section 4 are also practicing voter suppression as part of their electioneering tactics. One thing that I think counters that argument, though, is that under Section 4, those states that began as, you know, preclearance states, and those jurisdictions that began as preclearance jurisdictions, could appeal to have that lifted if they could just go 10 years without passing a law designed to suppress black or minority voters. All they have to do is make it 10 years without abusing voting rights, and they could be removed. And as it happened, New Hampshire, or I think it was a district in New Hampshire, was removed because of 10 years of not abusing our constitutional right to vote. So these things were updated over time and could be updated if they could just go 10 years without abusing voting rights. The jurisdiction that put this case forward, Shelby County, Alabama, brought the case because they were blocked from a very abusive redistricting that was designed to move the one black city council member by splitting up the black area of Calera, Alabama, into all of the other districts because one black city council member was too many for them in the Obama era. So, you know, during the case, you had, I think it was Sotomayor saying, how is it that you were the one complaining about it being unfair that there should be preclearance in those jurisdictions with a history, a recent history of voting rights abuses? So I think that Chief Justice Roberts is a very clever man, but I think it's hard not to look at the partisan breakdown. The five justices that were either appointed by President Bush or appointed President Bush voted to do this, and the four justices who were neither appointed by President Bush or appointed President Bush are the ones who voted against doing this. So, I don't know. That's my take on it. That's not how I really planned to do the show. I sort of like put all my notes to bed and everything like that. So that's what I had to say about it anyway.
Well, you have a caller, Eric. I don't know if you can see the studio board, but there's a caller from area code 954 with their hand up. Should I open their mic?
Okay, I bet you that's Neil.
All right.
How you doing?
I'm mad at Blog Talk Radio.
I'm just really disgusted by this. I mean, I'm not surprised. It's just the dismantling of the progression of this country. I mean, obviously, they're going to go after next the Roosevelt era. I mean, they're coming after probably Social Security, Civil Rights Act. I mean, nothing's going to get done in Congress, obviously. It's going to be delayed, and what they're really aiming for was perfect timing because for the 2014 midterm elections, you know that all the red states will try to pretty much cease voting of anyone they don't want to vote.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's the major goal. I mean, it's basically disenfranchise a very large percentage of people in this country.
You know, the other point that I wanted to make, you know, because you know that one of the themes of this show is that Michael Charney and I would like to see the Republican Party retool for the 21st century. In other words, to appeal to a diverse electorate. And this is the other alternative, right? The other alternative is just to try to prevent that diverse population from joining the electorate or try to prevent them from continuing to vote, as is the case with this voter ID law. People who've been voting for 50, 60 years are turned away from the polls because when they were born, there weren't government issued or or they were born outside of, they weren't born in a hospital. They had a midwife give birth to them. And those people, 80-year-old grandmothers barred from voting. I'm disappointed also because I think this means that what we're going to see is the Republican Party behaving sort of like a trapped animal for the next 10 years or so until this gerrymandered House of Representatives is no longer in power. And, they might not be in power after 2016. But these kinds of laws will help in Virginia in 2013. These kind of laws will help in 2014. I don't know if there'll be much help in 2016, but what it's doing is it's keeping these basic selfish profiteer politicians in power a little bit longer at the expense of their party, at the expense of the long-term viability of the Republican Party. Because you can take this, you can take a story and put it on Fox News, and you can take a political ad and put it on every channel with all the money that is back in the Republican Party right now, and you can convince consumers of political advertising disguised as news channels that suppressing the vote of minorities in order to win elections is perfectly okay. Because those other guys, those liberals, those Democrats, if they win elections, it destroys the country. So it's only fair to cheat. You can create that narrative. But that's only convincing to the Fox News audience. Average age 72. Okay, how much longer are you going to be able to hold on to your sweet, corrupt power situation with a core base, a voting base? The only people who believe you when you lie are average age 72, and every year another crop of multicultural 18-year-olds registers to vote. It's just, it is a death spiral, and this is going to basically force the Republican Party to litigate the question of, do we want to suppress the vote in order to win elections in the short term, or, as Eric Cantor said today, do we want to try to uphold the right to vote, and I applaud him for that, and have a Republican Party that can compete at the national level in years going forward, which is, I think, something our country needs. And they're going to have this publicly. They're going to have this debate publicly, and, because of primary situation, Republicans who are going to be forced to take the most extreme position on this, or else someone else will replace them in the primary. And so we're just going to see this circus, and it's going to hurt the Republican Party brand no matter what Jeb Bush or Stephen Lotteret or Tom Davis tries to do. So it's really disappointing in so many ways.
Well, Eric, what the major problem is the gerrymandering too. I mean, you can't get these people out. They're so ingrained that their seat in their district is protected. And as long as that's going on, the Republicans are really able to do whatever they want. That's why they're showing their true face. They've always tried to maintain that they're not misogynist and racist and trying to keep people from voting, but as long as they're able to maintain their power, no matter what the circumstance, that's what scares me.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, politicians do that, and I've said this before: nobody is their best self when they're afraid and when they feel like they're being attacked. And I've been meeting and talking to a lot of politicians in North Carolina, a lot of Republican politicians. And I've begun to develop sort of a theory that people begin to take these really extreme positions that are not really supportable because they feel attacked. They feel like somebody has insulted them, and they feel like people hate them. And so they say, well, if they're going to treat me that way, if they're going to talk to me about, that way, then I'm just going to take the position that hurts them too. I'm going to try to hurt them back. And I think that's a little bit of what's going on in North Carolina. I think that's a little bit of what's going on in the Republican Party. It's a kind of a cycle, right? I mean, they behave in ways that are racially insensitive, that are sort of backward-looking. Then we call them out for it, and then they get their feelings hurt, and they do it some more to get back at us.
Well, don't you think, this is Janine again, don't you think there's a little bit of, it's not egging on, but I mean, this is a sort of a natural kind of bickering or bantering that keeps people from seeing what's actually going on. I mean, I think people, it's almost like trolls on Facebook, where they come in, they attack two words in a post, take the whole comment section off to another side, start having people side up about whatever it is they're talking about. I mean, to me, this is just it's such an ordinary strategy, and I'm frustrated that it continues to work, this whole polarization game, you know. And to me, it's like part of the conversation here is, what does it take, Eric, for us to see our true middle ground, you know, based on objectives rather than on the past, based on the future, and not informed by all these hostile conversations that have been going on over the years.
I really think things just flew off the handle when Barack Obama was elected. And there was a sense that it's okay to try to undermine this administration for 4 years and then get him out of office. And then we'll all go back to working together again and trying to move the country forward. But, you know, just for the good of whatever they thought was the higher good than the well-being of our country, they tried to make Barack Obama a one-term president at all costs. And then after the election, there were some of us who hoped that they would say, okay, well, we did it for 4 years, but that's, you know, five would be too many to work against job creation in my own country, to work against a sense of unity and a sense of common, you know, a common fate and purpose in my country. 5 years would be too many to sabotage the economic recovery. And then they just said, well, you know what, what's another 2 years, right? And then we can try to use this tactic for the midterms. So, you know, why not do it for eight? You know, and if Hillary Clinton is elected president, as most people expect, I'm sure there are going to be people who are arguing and say, well, what's a decade of sabotage if it will eventually get us back to the White House? But this is the thing, is that the only people who believe that are 72. That it's a shrinking base. And so they've got to wean themselves off these kinds of tactics. And until they do, our country is basically flying with one wing.
Well, and, you know, I always look at these things from sort of a business perspective. It's how I'm, you know, it's how I roll. And one of the things that's pretty clear to me is that just the whole conversation, this is going to sound like a sidebar, but I promise to bring it back. We call certain people job creators who are indeed wealth builders. And the difference between a job creator and a wealth builder is the event horizon, how far out into the future you go. Because a wealth, you know, the long game for a wealth builder has to do with a strategy for profit or an outcome that we call profit. But their short game can look like it's about jobs, like it's about providing customer service, like it's about, we forget that business activity is just a cash vector. In other words, they'll do anything that'll make money. That's why when, you know, there's opportunistic businesses that pop up when the government says it wants, you know, the full-body x-ray machine, all of a sudden there's an invented company. It's because cash follows opportunity. It has really nothing to do with the people who work, the prosperity of a community. Those are only coincidentally related. And what you just said, Eric, is very much the same. It's like there's a long-term goal out there. And it can look like I'm a public servant. It can look like I'm representing my district. It can look like a lot of things. But that's really just the vector to that long-term goal. But what I don't understand, and maybe you're getting a grip on from your conversations in North Carolina and other places with Story of America, is what is that long-term goal? What is it? Because it doesn't look good for anybody except maybe the guys who want to, you know, have enough money to buy the seat on the Starship Exodus that's leaving for Mars? I mean, seriously, what is the end game?
You mean what's the end game that's going to bring us all together?
Right. What's the end game of voter suppression? What's the end game of all of the, you know, what is it we actually want to accomplish from this? What will happen that is not happening now?
You mean with the voter suppression laws?
By voter suppression, by gerrymandering, by all of this.
Well, first of all, notice it's not really happening in those places that are most, you know, mostly white, you know. So they're not too worried about the African-American turnout in Vermont right now. But what's happened is that in those southern states where there is a population that didn't flee the Ku Klux Klan and Jim Crow and still lives in those states, that created a possible voting base for a coalition, a multiracial coalition that can see past the tactics of divide and conquer. And then you have states like Arizona where there's a Latino base, right? Or
yeah.
Texas even, where there's a Latino base. So we're dealing with these voter suppression laws in those places where there's enough minorities where if they actually did vote at the same numbers as white voters, then it would make it a lot harder to win elections based on a whole lot of money and race baiting, which is a formula that's worked really well for a long time. And so North Carolina has that African-American base and a rapidly growing Asian-American and Latino population. Barack Obama wins it in 2008. And I think there are two things going on here. I mean, actually, there's a lot of things going on here. You know, Republicans were frustrated with the way Democrats had run the General Assembly, and that there had been some corruption and there had been some boneheaded laws and that sort of thing. But I think the main thing here is that those people who are making a career in politics and believe in the Republican Party, it's not just for the long term of the Republican Party. I think they're kicking that to the curb. For their own careers, they need the gerrymandering, they need the voter suppression to keep them in power until they're super, super rich, until they've basically enriched themselves. So they've had this career that can then they can go on and run a think tank or become a lobbyist or maybe be the president of a university. But if they're in office for just a few years and they don't get to build that dynasty, well, why did they do it in the first place? So I think they're basically saying, look, this stuff isn't going to – it's like trying to build a dam against, you know, it's trying to use sand to build a dam against a hurricane flood. But in the short term, it's going to work. In 2014, it could mean the difference between a Democratic or a Republican victory in the Senate race. Kay Hagan, the Democrat, is trying to defend her seat in 2014. These legislators that are in power now have to run for re-election, many of them, in 2014. And they're a swing state in 2016. So in the very, very short term, if they can limit, delay, if they can shave off a percentage of the minority vote, with that Fox News base that they have still being large enough, then they can win. And they're basically giving up on anything beyond that, which has kind of been the tactic for the Republican Party for a long time, is they use whatever they need to win the next election. So 2002, they used the Iraq, you know, the need to go to Iraq because we were attacked by Al-Qaeda, which was based in Afghanistan. And in 2004, they used gay marriage. You know, 2006, they tried to, I think they tried to use gay marriage and war on terror, and it didn't work. You know, in 2010, they doubled down basically on racial hysteria. You know, so they're doing things that work in the short term, and they're selling out in the long term, but what it'll do is it'll enrich those people who have the power to make those decisions right now, and it'll cripple the Republican Party in the long term.
So you're saying that you think this is, I mean, I think you're right about a Republican victory, but what is it the Republican, what will this victory do? What future is it that they seek? you know. I mean, sometimes talking to people on Facebook, I just feel like, you know, the Civil War isn't over yet, and we haven't stopped fighting. It can't be that simple. I mean, maybe it can be, but if the current party, minority party, becomes a majority party in Senate, or if this Republican victory occurs, what will they do with that power? What is it that we, minorities, women, all the other groups that they define, what are we preventing that they want?
Neil, what do you think?
I just think that basically that the Republicans will do anything. They'll do anything to stop anything. I mean, they're just going to continue filibustering every jobs bill, every infrastructure bill. They're not going to do anything about voting. They're just going to try to put everything into almost like a standstill and just create misery while at the same time yelling about where's the jobs, while basically doing the same exact things that have caused us not to have jobs and everything else. I mean, this whole thing is all interconnected. You know, stopping people from voting, scaring people from protesting. The news media is owned by six corporations. You don't hear anything about Monsanto. You don't hear anything about the job bills being filibustered. You don't hear anything about the Arkansas spill. It's just everything is interconnected and controlled. And that's what we're up against. We're up against a very, very powerful, you know, ever since Citizens United, we're up against a very, very powerful bunch of billionaires who think they're libertarians, who want to basically own the government and change this country, take it backward by maybe 80, 90 years.
Well, I can tell you that in North Carolina, at least, where I'm most, I guess in Virginia as well, in those two states where I have spent the most time talking to Republican legislators, a lot of them really do believe that in order to grow the economy, you have to cut programs that aid the poor and the working class and the middle class and give tax breaks to the wealthy. And it sounds like a, I don't know, it sounds mean, but they actually think that by doing that, the economy as a whole will grow and a rising tide will lift all boats and it will help those poor people. I mean, there are some people, I'm not sure if they believe it. I'm not sure if it's just in order to get the big donations that come from, you know, the Koch brothers. Art Pope is the Koch brother dude for North Carolina. You know, the Chamber of Commerce type of lobbying organization. Some of them maybe are just doing it for the donations, but I think some of them actually do believe the economic theory. So I will say that there's some sincerity there. And I think some of them have that sentiment that it's interesting. It came up a couple of times, once in person and once in a blogosphere recently, where they're standing in line in the supermarket and they see someone buying something stupid like potato chips with food stamps, and they think that, well, what a waste that they're not even buying nutritional food. Or the thing I heard in person was somebody saw a person who was African-American buy a lime with food stamps and then pay for their alcohol with cash, and so therefore it's just a ripoff. And so I know that's very much late, you know, it's very racial, but there's this feeling somewhat, I can't say it's separate from race, but there is a feeling that these programs are helping people who just don't deserve it. And I think people resent the poor in a way. They don't like to see a panhandle. They don't like to see someone at the roadside saying, I'm a Vietnam veteran and I'm homeless. It makes them feel guilty. It makes them feel like they would like to help, but they don't feel like they can. And then it just kind of, I don't know, brings them down. And so they develop some sort of protection against their own humanity by dehumanizing those people who they probably naturally would like to care about.
Well,
I don't know.
Isn't it a surprise, though? I mean, it's not a surprise that they keep on calling themselves Christians, but they really are Randites I mean, they really just love Ayn Rand. I mean, I listen to these people, and they claim that people are buying lobster or they're just like, you know, the poor. But if their mentality, I listen to Paul Ryan, and he'll say, we have a dependency class. Okay, if we have a dependency class, then basically let job bills go through, raise the minimum wage to a living wage, then there won't be a dependent class. It will be greatly reduced. It's common sense. It's like they rail against abortion. Okay, improve science, have better access to birth control, there'll be less abortion. But it really is more than it's about abortion. It's about sex. They have no problem with violence, but they have a massive amount of problem with sex. And they don't want to rectify the problem of poverty while they complain there's poverty. And I that's the whole Randite mentality. It's like, I have mine, I don't care about you, and I'm going to point fingers at you that it wasn't the banks that caused the problems, it wasn't the plutocracy, it was a bunch of poor people or seniors that caused our economic problems. And they keep on telling themselves and repeating the same mantra over and over again because they're just paid to feel that way by their, you know, benefactors, the Koch brothers and other people. I mean, we basically, they've spent more time trying to stop people from voting in abortion than they have spent on infrastructure, on jobs, on the environment, on poverty, on education, everything. And it gets to me after a while. I have to turn the TV off because I'm tired of shouting at these people who are complete, you know, they're lying to us.
Yeah.
Well, and it is true that. Go ahead.
No, go ahead, Jane.
Well, I just want to agree with, you know, the Congress has proven to me that there is such a thing as death by a thousand paper cuts, and that all they have to do is hack, 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 hack at nothing, and pretty soon your leg falls off, and hack, 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 and pretty soon something else falls off. And it's so clever. This is such a clever thing that in the process of dismantling this imaginary human being, maybe I should imagine the Statue of Liberty being hack, 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 hack by some little sculptor guy with a little chisel and a thing. But it works. If you keep hacking long enough, things fall apart. And there's no American ideal that is served by this, you know? And so it's almost as though we have to suspend our idealism if we buy into it. And it feels like the American idealism has been subverted by some kind of anger that always comes down to, how come you're living on Easy Street when I'm working so hard? How come you can buy a lime with your food stamps and I can't even afford a lime? You know, I mean, it's interesting kind of rhetoric, the kind of thing that used to destroy people's reputations in junior high. But it's hack, 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 and pretty soon, you know, down comes the torch off the Statue of Liberty. Is the end game here to reinvent America to something other than, I mean, people talk about going back, and indeed, we'd be going back to the before the last depression, it seems, given what everybody's doing here. But what is the America they seek? What is the America if this is what it takes to become a workforce again, if this is what it, I'm unclear. I mean, I'm a huge critic of what's going on, but sometimes you can't focus your input if you don't know what it is they're trying to accomplish. All we can do is respond to these thousand paper cuts. Well, there's no power in that in terms of us. Those of us that have a vision for America that is inclusive and evolving and rational and civil and tolerant. I mean, I think I'm going to speak for myself, I have some pretty clear ideals of what I'd like to see America grow to. And it's not really at anybody's expense as far as I can tell. So what is so expensive about this that they'll tear it down before they build it again? What is it they want? I don't know.
Mm-hmm. Well, I don't know if this will help, but I heard this story here in North Carolina, trying to understand the psychology of you know, it's another generation for most of us. I mean, you, Janine, I guess you could probably remember before the Civil Rights era, can you?
Yes.
Not really, right? You can? Okay.
Yes. I can remember integrating schools. I can remember the civil rights actions. I remember all the other day on one of my posts, I call it Second Amendment solutions of the 60s, where people were dropping like flies. It was a
mm-hmm.
hard time.
Mm-hmm. Well, the Reverend Barber, I had a chance to kind of listen to a conversation he was having with some of the people who are just trying to understand with some degree of compassion what the Republican legislature is trying to do here. And what we're talking about is men who are in their 60s and 70s, who have been in power for a long time, trying to hold on to power. And Reverend Barber said, well, there was this politician in Virginia who did some funny things. His name was Marshall Coleman. And he had run for governor against an African-American, Douglas Wilder. I think it was 85 or something, maybe 89. And it was a very close race, but Wilder won. An African-American became, I believe, the first African-American governor in the United States. And this man, Marshall Coleman, had lost. And so he demanded a recount, and then that came through, and he still lost. And he demanded another one, and that came through, and he still lost. And he demanded another one, and he went around kind of proclaiming that it just could not be, you know, that he just refused to accept the outcome of the election. And people at the time marveled at, like, why was he behaving like this? And Reverend Barber said that some other wise man had told him, it might even have been Wilder himself, but another man from that era, you know, said the reason he was behaving this way was because his mama lied to him. You see, when he was a young man and the civil rights movement started to catch fire, you know, the inevitability of equal rights for all Americans began to strike fear in the hearts of those who were comfortable with the status quo. Marshall Coleman's mother said to him, well, it may be that in some places you're going to have to compete with the black boys. You might have to play sports with them. They might be in your classroom. You might even see them in the same jobs. But there are some places where a black boy will never go. In this country, there are some places where you can rest assured, my son, that you will not have to compete with a black boy. And so when the poll came in, when the returns came in, and this man, Marshall Coleman, found that he had lost a very high office, governor of the state of Virginia, to a black man, there are only two conclusions. Either the election returns were wrong, or his mama lied to him. And like any loyal son, he concluded that the election returns were wrong. And I think in some ways our country, certainly North Carolina, but our country is going through a similar reaction to the election of our first black president. Either their idea of America was a lie, or the America we're becoming is, well, there's something wrong with it. It does need to be torn down. It needs to be blown up, and we need to start over if this can happen. And I think some of the economic sabotage comes from that, and certainly the attempts to try to basically, it's like they're trying to put those shoes that they put on women's feet in China to keep them from growing.
Yes.
They
yes.
don't want the electorate to grow into a multicultural electorate that they can't control. And so these voter suppression laws or an attempt to basically put some kind of foot tourniquet on the electorate, the population they can't control. But those who actually make it to the polls, they think, at least for a time, they can. And I think that's the motivation. It's not just the way that some people can enrich themselves, but for others, it's preserving the world that, you know, in this metaphor, that their mothers painted for them. They're preserving that world.
Yes, yes, that, or at least the illusion, the story that they were told. I have a really quick mom story to go with that. When I was young and watching little black children try to go to public schools in the South, and watching these adults stand on the side of the road and throw things at them and sneer and jeer and all of that, I turned to my mom and I said, why are those adults being so mean to those children? And my mom, she didn't miss a beat. She goes, some people are never adults, no matter how old they are. And it sort of left me with that you could really have a notion like you just described, one that you just held so true that facts were irrelevant. Facts were irrelevant. And there was no opportunity for growth there. It was like a closed box. It was some cooked, done deal, cake baked, all of that. Listen, you've inspired another caller. There are people listening on the phone lines, which is great. And if anyone else in chat or who is streaming would like to call in, we have about 21 minutes left. And the number to call in is 646-929-2495. And if I may, Eric, I'll open up area code 770. Hey, 770, you're on the middle ground.
This is 770. Do you have more than one?
Nope, that's you.
Good, great. Hey, this is Pat Thompson here in Atlanta. Another one of the states that is really affected by this, not just because we're in the South, it's because we've formed all of our political machinery around, you know, keeping people from voting. So when we still allow people here, like in many states, our legislators actually draw our districts, and they get the ability to do that every time we do the census, right? And so they're drawing districts ever more so that they weaken people who might vote against them. And I'm not saying it's just one party. In the past, it was done by other parties, but we have been extremely Republican here for a long time, and the Republicans have done all they can to make sure that they have a majority in winning areas, and many times that means writing out and keeping people of color, of any color, from voting. It's getting tighter and tighter. We just had the SAFE Act was sponsored here in Georgia, which means basically giving the states the right to be able to decide who gets to vote, not the federal government. So you take a federal voting law and you say, well, the states can take their own approach at it, and you're going to end up with, you know, people who should be voting are going to be excluded, either because of their age, that they don't have an ID, or because they think there's some kind of, I mean, they throw out the fake voter fraud thing when we have no instances of voter fraud. So it's very frustrating to see some of the changes with the Supreme Court ruling that they'll just continue to get worse, I think, with this ruling.
You know, do you know who your Secretary of State is in Georgia?
Yes.
What's his name?
Cagle.
Okay. That's him. I just looked him up. Yeah. I filmed a hearing on voter ID in which, let me just make sure it is his name, Cagle. The picture is right, but Brian Kemp, actually. It says Brian Kemp in his name. That sounds right.
Oh, sorry.
So, Kemp. Yeah, Kegel.
Okay, so Brian Kemp was flown to North Carolina, Raleigh, North Carolina, to basically testify in a hearing in favor of voter ID. And his whole argument, he had a huge slideshow, but he could have boiled it down to one sentence. And that is that in Georgia, despite implementing voter ID several years ago, the number of people who are people of color, Latinos and blacks, who vote has grown. So in spite of voter ID, more blacks voted in 2012 than in 2008, and more than 2008 than in 2004, and therefore it hasn't had any impact on the number of African Americans and Latinos who voted. So that's
yes,
his argument.
It's very interesting logic, because if you put the logic together, President Obama was the big driver for most of that growth. But underneath all this is the fact that, where are they voting? So they're voting in incredibly smaller, gerrymandered precincts where, if that much growth was true, there would have been a change in the way we are governed here and the people that are governing us here. And that has not happened.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm sorry that we had the technical difficulties. We had a really great guest. His name is Irving Joyner. He's a professor at law at North Carolina Central University, and he's also he volunteers legal advice for the NAACP. I wanted to try to connect what's happening in North Carolina to the voting rights decision that came down from the Supreme Court. As a way to sort of predict what might happen and maybe give folks a little bit of hope. Annabelle and I are going to go and interview Irving Joyner on video, and then we'll share that with you all. So you'll still get to not only hear him, but see him in this case. That's how we'll make it up to you. But this is what I'm seeing in North Carolina. And by the way, the districts are gerrymandered here, probably worse than Georgia, because I hear it's worse than anywhere in the country. Basically, after the sort of backlash 2010 election got Republicans into the state General Assembly, what they did is they drew districts that packed all the African Americans into as few House and Senate districts as possible. So those are black seats, very strong, because all of the black people in the state are packed into these weird chopped up starfish looking districts. And then all of the other districts have been bleached as white as possible. And by the way, it's not as simple as they don't want blacks in those districts, but they don't want people who live in diverse communities, because those also tend to be Democratic voters. So then what happened is that people went to the polls in 2012, and I think everybody knows that North Carolina was one of the few states that went from Obama to his opponent between 2008 and 2012. Very narrow. But it's also very narrow that more people in the state voted for a Democratic member of the General Assembly than a Republican. It was very close, but less than 50% of the people voted for Republicans in the General Assembly. And so then you have this legislature that's two-thirds Republican because of these gerrymandered districts. And essentially, one vote for a Democrat, it was worth three-fifths as much as a vote for a Republican in this state where I'm filming right now. And so then you send a legislature that actually was elected with less than 50% of voters. And that creates right there a dynamic tension between the people and the elected officials. And on top of that, then they try to institutionalize their power by basically writing into law things that not only abridge the right to vote for communities of color, but also laws that redistribute wealth through the instrument of government from the people of the state to the wealthy donors and wealthy shareholders of corporations, Some of them live in the state, but most of them do not. So it's basically a wealth extraction executed by government, and the people are up in arms. There were 2,500 people at the General Assembly, and if they all could have fit into the building, they would have been places. You should see the video. You can see it at the top of coffeepartyusa.com. A few minutes into that video, you see the place about to explode with people. They're upset. And so if this is what is going to be the pattern around the United States, a combination of tricky voting tactics and wealth extraction on behalf of wealthy donors to political campaigns at the expense of the people, then there's going to be this kind of civil disobedience all over the United States. And, you know, if half the country wants to blow it up, the other half is going to try to fight to keep it. But, you know, I'm not pessimistic, but because of what I'm seeing here, but it is gonna be a long time before I think we're all rowing together to make this country great.
Eric, there's another caller at area code 518. May I open the mic for you?
Oh, thanks. Yes, please.
Caller in 518, welcome to the Middle Ground. Hi.
Hi, Janine. Hi, Eric. Joe Pomponio, living in New York. I wasn't really surprised at the ruling. I've been expecting it. Look, I lived through the civil rights movement, and, you know, I'll keep it real simple. We're back to ground zero. I vaguely remember what was occurring. I wasn't part of it. I was just a teenager. I got a lot of grief for it, too. I didn't live in an integrated neighborhood at that time. There weren't many. I moved out of one to one. That's why I guess I'm the way I am. To really get down to specifics, this is going to involve an effort to get everybody of color, of belief in human dignity and fairness, all right, to get registered. They are going to try and stop. This is what this is all about. Now, I don't know how difficult it will be. It's a big lift. But I'm assuming whatever obstacles they throw, if we can overcome half, three-quarters of them, all right, we could, you know, basically try to do something. This would really have to be an effort under the auspices of the NAACP, right? We have to find a way where they're asking for all this insane information to get it so these people can get registered. Now, the one thing I think this decision is overlooking is right now we're looking at Hispanics and we're looking at Asians. Okay, the mix has gotten bigger, right? This thing of color applies basically, all right, mainly to African Americans, but it's spread among others. Among them, Arab Americans, and you know that is a forefront that we have time. We can attack it that way. In the meantime, you know, anything getting through Congress isn't going to work. So, back to 1963, back to 1964. It's, you know, it's going to come down to demonstrating civilly. But we're going to have to get in their faces. We're going to have to put pressure on them and keep pressure on them. Maybe, okay, even as dysfunctional as that Congress is, we might get somewhere. You know, other than that, I mean, I was terribly disappointed. But in all fairness, I'm looking at this court. Like I said, this is something I was expecting. Just a quick note, there was another decision in this ruling regarding labor. Can't remember exactly what it is, but it has to do with your legal right if you're fired or not hired. The easiest example I could give you is if they won't hire you because of your age, that's one thing. But if they give a list of things, all right, the other things don't have to matter. If age is in there, the other things all together are considered, and you don't have a leg to stand on. I'm not an attorney. I'm not quite sure that I've got that right. But the ruling is online, and, you know, that's one of the things I picked out of it. So these guys are going to town. They're coming after work. They're going after everybody. And the 1%ers are going to be real happy with this.
Well, in the long term, I don't think there's going to be a Republican president for a long time because of these tactics. So it means that a lot of these Supreme Court decisions will eventually be reversed.
Well,
it's not
Eric,
just because of the... Yeah, go ahead.
Eric, I'd like to think that, but, you know, I've been watching people like Scott Walker and some of the other governors, and I really think when we get to the lame duck Congress at the end of the year, they're going to change the electoral vote rules. Right? Yeah, they've said they wouldn't. Now they're being real quiet about it. They did that with the labor laws out in Wisconsin. And it was like middle of the night before, you know, when everybody was asleep, wham, they changed everything. And I've got a feeling that's coming. I think that's the race in the hole, okay? And that's what, in their minds, they feel they'll be able to do to gain the presidency. I hope I'm wrong, but I'm sorry, I don't trust them.
Mm-hmm. Well, I might give them a better shot if they could split up Wisconsin and Pennsylvania, you know, and apportion the votes according to the gerrymandered congressional districts rather than how people actually voted. Yeah, I guess I am surprised. I think that some of these justices, at least Kennedy and Roberts have some awareness that it is the 21st century and it's the beginning of the 21st century, and they're going to be remembered, like other Supreme Court justices, by people who live in a more progressive, developed, multicultural, tolerant America. And, you know, now they've got these twin rulings. Citizens United maximizes the influence that money has on elections. And now, to a degree, I don't think to the same degree, but to a degree, this ruling today, 5-4 partisan decision, it dampens the impact that the people have on elections. And really quickly, before I throw it back to you, Joe, let me just explain what happens now in terms of Voting Rights Act. Yes, Congress is supposed to try to do something, or they're not. If they do, they're just going to be a big, ugly fight. But in the courts, what is going to happen now is that in order to challenge a law that abridges voting rights in these formerly covered jurisdictions, people will have to wait until the election takes place, until an illegitimate government is elected, and then challenge it. And that's going to be very, very costly. Most of these jurisdictions aren't going to be able to do it. And if they do, the courts are going to be flooded with cases because those covered jurisdictions are indeed the places where people are most likely to have a hysterical reaction to demographic shift and to the shift in our voting patterns as a result. And they're going to do things like this in those states. And that also then means that in the jurisdictions that weren't covered before, places like Ohio that were never covered, but they have, you know, as cynical voter suppression laws as any, there's going to be less resources, less ability to respond to those laws as well. So it's basically going to do exactly what it's designed to do, and that is delay the time when the sort of diverse America that we are becoming is as formidable a voting bloc as the Fox News audience. So, is that helping you feel any better or making you feel worse?
No, but it does give me insight as to more of what we're up against.
They didn't say that voter suppression is legal. It's still illegal. It's just a lot harder to fight in the courts now because all the places where it's rampant are now going to basically flood all of the good government organizations and all those organizations that try to fight against voter suppression. They'll be overwhelmed.
I think I got that because the section of law they gutted basically was the marshal, all right, that, you know, kept people in line. And without that, you don't have a sheriff, so now you've got to go a long way, okay? Now you've got to assemble your own case and bring it to a court, and ultimately, yes, down the road, you'll probably win, but until then, they're in control. The concern, if I have a main concern, okay, it's that in the time it takes to do that, there are other things moving in the background, all right? Workers' rights, women's rights, and they're only going to start snowballing things. And, you know, yes, we will get it all straightened out, I'm sure of that. But the core of the problem has to have a control valve, and that's what that act was that they struck down. Getting that replaced means we've got to get a functional Congress and an understanding Senate. I'm not going to political parties. If you can find Republicans that seem to feel we're all equal, okay, we've got a good shot. But it's on us, the voters, again, and back to the registration and having the voters understand what we're up against. To me, that's our best line of defense.
Well, we'll use the last 2 minutes to... Oh, go ahead, Janine.
Oh, no, I was just going to point out we're less than 2 minutes, and we have one other caller that we may or may not be able to get to. It's your call, Eric.
Oh, yeah, let's try it. Who's it?
Okay, I'm opening it up. Eric code 4.
Bobby Rodriguez. You have, everybody.
Hey, Bobby. You got a minute. 1 minute.
I'm going to offer some small rays of hope here, Eric. Well, everybody, about what happened. My view of what the court did today was by eliminating the section of the Voters' Rights Act. The important part of that is that it now changes the burden of proof. I disagree that we'd have to wait for an illegal government to be elected to challenge the law, but the problem is that the burden of proof now is shifted from them proving that they are following the mandates of the Voter Rights Act to, you know, the opposing party, the Department of Justice, or you or I, in that regard. I will tell you though that Congress, just like the other two branches, doesn't like to be told what to do and what they can and cannot do. And Congress did acquire mounds of evidence that allowed them to have a unanimous vote in the Senate, and I believe there was only 13 or 30 people that voted against it in the House the last time they reauthorized the section of the VRA. I'm curious to see how that plays out, except for the fact that we have this polarized situation and nobody likes this president from different directions. So, like I said, it's a small ray of hope. But I do find it curious, one last point, that the court struck down an Arizona law last week that required proof of U.S. citizenship by people filling out the federal form, and yet turn around and throw out this section of the Voters' Rights Act. It's almost a conflict in what they did, because that was really important what happened in Arizona last week, and it got very little play. But they threw out a requirement that you have to prove that you're a U.S. citizen in order to vote in the federal election. So I was hoping that this ruling was going to be the opposite because of that ruling and who wrote it, actually. But unfortunately, it didn't happen that way.
Yeah. Well, it does. Joe Musson realized that when he said that a lot of these cases will probably eventually be won, but it's only if they have enough money to even be brought. So thank you, everyone, who has persevered, especially Janine, who dialed 800 times and got the busy thing when it finally got through a half an hour after I thought we'd canceled the show. And so I got into it, and I never really opened up my notes and everything, but I just kind of was winging it, and I apologize for not being as middle as I'm supposed to be on the middle ground. I was upset by the ruling and then kind of doubly upset by Blog Talk Radio collapsing. But Joe, Bobby, Neil, as always, thanks for calling in. Pat in Atlanta, I believe it was Pat in Atlanta. Thank you for calling, Janine. Thanks for rescuing this opportunity to talk about a historic day. And we'll talk about it again in the future, I'm sure. Michael Trina will be back on the next episode of The Middle Ground. Looking forward to that.
Excellent.
Thanks for listening, everybody.
That's our time for tonight. Thanks for joining us, and please share your comments and suggestions with us at conservatives.coffeepartyusa.com, where you can follow The Middle Ground and participate in the 99% media. Our theme was written and performed by The Consultants and produced by Van Gabriel. Please join us again next week on The Middle Ground. Until then, be wise, be strong, be strong.